finished four talks on the meaning of the resurrection of Jesus. And the chapter we were looking at, 1 Corinthians 15, ends with Paul saying, "Stand firm, always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord." And the work of the Lord means spreading the good news that Jesus is risen. Christianity is not good advice, it's not moral advice, it's good news. Something has happened. Jesus is risen and death is defeated. Well, next Sunday is Pentecost, and we'll be starting a new series then on the book of Acts, which is the story of how the early church went out and spread that good news and changed the world more than anything else has ever done. And so we've just got this 1 week between those two series. And I thought it would be good just to think practically about how do we try to share the good news with the people around us. In 21st century London, the real world, where people are often indifferent, skeptical, sometimes hostile. And I recently read a very helpful chapter on that subject in Tim Keller's book, Center Church. So if any of you happen to be reading that book and get to chapter 21 and think, hang on a minute, I've heard this before somewhere, I have to say I've nicked it from him rather than him nicking it from me. So let's start by recognizing the huge cultural shift that has happened in the West over the last 50 years. As our culture has changed from being a Christian culture to a pretty much non-Christian culture over that time. We looked in much more detail at that in our evening service for a couple of weeks recently. But let me just give you one figure as an index of it. In 1950, about 75% of children in the UK or in England were baptized in the Church of England. Now it is less than 10%. So it's gone from 75% to less than 10% over that 65 years. That's a massive cultural change. Before that, we lived in what is sometimes called Christendom, where Christian values provided the moral code. Most people probably thought there was a God who made the world. Certainly they knew the basic facts of the Christian story through school and so on. And there was generally an agreed understanding of what right and wrong were. Whether we kept those rules or not was another matter, but we kind of agreed what we should do. And in that environment, evangelism mainly involved encouraging people to come to some sort of maybe special church service and respond personally to the message. And the role of the professional clergy as the kind of voice of the church doing the evangelism was obviously central. Well, you don't need me to tell you that Christendom has gone. And most people don't go to church and would never consider going to church. A vicar I know in quite a tough part of southeast London said recently that his parishioners would be more likely to think of making a trip to the moon than they would of going to their local church. And I thought, that sounds ridiculous. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, I think he's probably right. So if we see if we want to share the good news with people, we can no longer see the church and the church service as the primary connecting point with them. We've got to reach out to people with the good news where they are in the community. And if I can have my first PowerPoint up, Kyle. That means that it has to be done by you out there in the world, not by the clergy in here. Laity is just a fancy word for you lot. One survey said that the key factor in whether churches were growing or not was whether they were in Christendom mode. Christendom mode is we're all sort of Christians and we just wait and expect people to come to church. Well, if churches are in that mode, they had pretty much no chance of growing. We have to completely change our mindset and think, how do we get out there to where people are and reach them in their normal everyday lives? Now, of course, it's not new for the church to be in a non-Christian in a pagan culture. And it's exactly where the early church found itself, as we'll be seeing in the weeks to come, and in which the church, of course, grew. Michael Green, in his book Evangelism in the Early Church, says its growth was really accomplished by means of informal missionaries. Christian lay people, not trained preachers, but just ordinary people who spread the good news to their friends in informal conversations. He says in homes, wine shops, on walks, and around market stalls. Just something that happened naturally and enthusiastically. A Roman writer called Celsus complained contemptuously about these unsophisticated Christians. He said, "We see in private homes the most illiterate and bucolic yokels who would not dare to say anything in front of their elders and more intelligent masters. But they get hold of any who are as ignorant as themselves and say, 'We know how people ought to live. If your children do as we say, you will be happy and you will make your homes happy too.'" So ordinary believers spreading the good news through simple friendship. So just to repeat the point, the missionaries are you guys out there in the real world, and our job as clergy is to equip you and help you to do that. Now, if we're going to have an impact in that, Tim Keller argues that we have to have three things. Hasn't appeared on the screen. It's on my screen, but it's not on your screen. Ah, there we are, getting there. Maybe it's just slow. He says we've got to have what he calls relational integrity, and that means three things. We've got to be like people. Okay, I wasn't expecting it all to appear magically. Don't touch it, Carl. Is that you or me? That's you. Keep your hands off. Okay, we've got to be like people, we've got to be unlike people, and we've got to be integrated with people, connecting with them. Okay, so we'll just unpack that a little bit more. Firstly, we've got to be like our neighbors. That means we're normal people. We wear the same clothes, we eat the same food, we do similar jobs, we have the same recreational and cultural interests. And it also means we're like our neighbors in relation to excellence. In other words, we seek to be good at what people want to be good at. Christians need to be skillful, hardworking, creative, diligent, resourceful, and disciplined in their work. If we look reassuringly normal and similar to the people around us, we'll see that we understand their world. And so people who work in finance need to know Christians who are in the finance world. People who live in the arts world need to know Christians who are like them, who are normal, who are doing what they do and do it well. So that's the first thing. We need to be like our neighbors. Okay, what's happening now? Okay, then the second thing is we need to be unlike our neighbors. Okay, we need to be different. So what Jesus means when he says we're in the world, but we're not of the world. We're like our neighbors, but we're different from them. And I want to just give you a list of some of the ways in which we can be different. Integrity. We tell the truth. We're trustworthy. We don't lie to get ourselves out of trouble or exaggerate to make a sale. Generosity. If we're employers, we should take less profit and pay people well. We should be generous as citizens with our time and money, living below the lifestyle at which we could live if we spent all our money on ourselves. We should be known for hospitality, welcoming others into our homes, especially those in need. And then we should be marked by sympathy, a genuine interest and concern for others, a willingness to listen. That will mark you out in most places, won't it? If you're actually interested in people and listen to them instead of just talking about yourself all the time. Chastity, stingy with our bodies and generous with our money as opposed to the other way around. Living lives that are marked by sexual faithfulness and purity. And if we don't live like that in the sexual arena, it will destroy our credibility as Christians. And lastly, people will notice how we respond to adversity. If we have a deep security in Christ, we'll be able to handle failure and trouble when it comes in a way that is different to people who are just relying on themselves. Just to give you one example of that difference, a woman I read about started exploring Christianity because shortly after starting a new job, she made a big mistake, and she thought that would be it. She'd be fired. But her boss went to his superior and took complete responsibility. And as a result, his reputation in the company suffered, and he lost some of his room to maneuver in the organization. And she was amazed because she'd often seen people take the credit for what the people under them did, but she'd never seen anyone take the blame. And when she thanked him, he was very modest and he kind of deflected her questions. And so she pressed him, and eventually he said, "Well, actually, I'm a Christian. And I believe Jesus took the blame for me when I messed up. So, you know, sometimes I have the ability to take the blame for other people." And she was so impressed by that. It was so striking that she actually even started going to church. What a weird thing to do. And just exploring Christianity. And then the third thing we need is to be engaged with our neighbors, both locally and at work. Let's just think about our neighbors first. We're seeking to develop non-superficial relationships with both neighbors and colleagues. The great advantage of having good people, good relationships with the people who live around you, of course, is that you can invite them to things locally and maybe even invite them to church. Whereas the people you work with in London probably live miles away. So take an interest in your neighborhood, walk around it, say hello to people. I'm working on smiling at people I recognize in the street without looking like a weirdo. And I think it goes okay sometimes, but I get a lot of funny looks. But actually, if you smile at people, often they do smile back, don't they? Get involved in a hobby or a sport locally. Don't just do stuff with other Christians, but do it with people who are not Christians. Support the school if you're a parent, and help the vulnerable, particularly the needy and the elderly who live around you. Now, all that may sound obvious, but lots of people who live around here have no engagement at all with the area. You know, we live in a virtual world where we engage only with people like us, people we already know, people who agree with us on everything, and we completely ignore our physical neighborhood around us. And we want to be noticeably good local neighbors. And then at work, again, as I say, take an interest in people, support them, listen to them. Maybe if you can, try to do some recreational stuff with them as well. And we know that we live in a world where there's real pressure on people at work. It's a more competitive, lonelier environment than it used to be. And there's perhaps less hope in future progress and growing prosperity than there used to be. And the quality, we hope, of our lives, our care for people, our integrity, our poise, should be marking us out. You know, if we know that we're loved by the only person in the universe whose opinion really matters, and we're unshakably loved by him, then our characters will start to have a depth that will be visible to others. So that's relational integrity. Our lives are integrated into the city, and our faith is integrated into our lives. And so we avoid the two pitfalls of the Christian bubble and the blend-in approach. Christian bubble is you spend all your time with Christians, and you don't really have any meaningful relationship with people who are not Christians. And we don't want to hide away in the nice, safe Christian community. But we also need to avoid the blend-in approach, where no one knows we're Christians. It's easy not really to take much interest or concern in our friends' spiritual needs, and just to try to be accepted and not to be seen as different. But I suggest to you it's not good enough if you're a Christian just to blend in. So we need to be out and proud, out of the closet, living out our faith. And I just want to read you a bit from that reading of Romans 12, which, you know, just imagine if you're a colleague like this. This would be very, very attractive. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud. Be willing to associate with people at low position. Don't be conceited. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. And if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Doesn't everyone want colleagues like that? And that will really stand out, I think. Now, I know we often fail. We're human. We're fallible. But we still want to say, you know, it's my faith that gives me the power to begin to try to live like that. And what I would hope is that when we start to live like that, when we're like our neighbors, we're unlike them, we're engaged with them, that people will start to ask us questions. You know, maybe it will be, well, how do I tell the truth in my job? Or what do you do when you fail? Or how do I make my marriage work? Or how do I relate to my teenager? Or spiritual questions like, what is the point of life? How do I deal with suffering and illness? People are searching for answers to questions like that, aren't they? And if we have relational integrity and we're interested in people, then they will talk to us about these things. People who come to faith almost always say, I knew someone is a Christian and I saw that there was something different about them. So I think in a post-Christendom world, people come to faith mainly through what I've called a series of mini decisions. They need to see bit by bit and try Christianity out and begin to see that it works in the real world. It helps them with the pressures and the problems that they face in their lives. 50 years ago, when people knew most of the background for Christianity and took it for granted, then they could go to a big rally at Wembley Stadium, or they could come to a service at church and they could hear the gospel and they think, Jesus did that for me, and they could respond. But generally today, people are miles away from that sort of response. And so they need to see that Christians are normal, rational people, question mark, that's you, and that Christianity makes sense and can be applied to the issues they face in their lives. And so people come to faith over time, gradually, as they try it out. That means we need to persevere, and we need to be patient, like Greg with his friend has been coming for a year. You know, often people need to come and think about things for 2, 3, 4 years before they're in a position to make a decision. Now, there are some great resources to use. Greg mentioned one-to-one. This is something called Uncover. And, this goes through Luke's gospel, but it does so asking questions like, can humans live a satisfied life without hope? I don't know why there's a picture of a kipper here, but anyway. Question about optimism there. Question, what is it that people are seeking in our celebrity-obsessed age? And answers those questions from Luke's gospel, so you don't have to make it all up yourself. Or read a book, chapter at a time, with somebody. Tim Keller's book on marriage is brilliant, I think. Or watch a parenting DVD. Maybe if you've been bereaved, have coffee once a fortnight with some other people who are in the same situation. Just begin to talk about your experiences. Or if you're an artist, get together with some other artists and talk about a Christian perspective on art. So Christianity is, evangelism now is not a big event, one-off kind of thing. It happens gradually. It's organic. So it's natural, it's not organized, it's done by the laity, not the clergy. It's relational, one-to-one, small groups. It's gradual, it's a process, not a crisis. And lastly, it's active, looking for opportunities. Now, maybe you think, I can't possibly do that, I'm not trained. And I wouldn't know what to say. Well, I think the key thing is just to be yourself. And hopefully you don't need training to do that. If you remember only one thing today, then I would suggest this might be the thing to remember. It's a quote from Rebecca Manley Pippitt. And I put it on the notice sheet so you can take it away with you. And this is what she says. Our problem in evangelism is not that we don't have enough information. It's that we don't know how to be ourselves. We forget that we're called to be witnesses to what we have seen and know, not to what we don't know. The key on our part is authenticity and obedience, not a doctorate in theology. We don't know how to be ourselves, she says. Just be yourself. And if you pray about that, as Greg was saying, you pray about stuff, you forget you've prayed, and then sooner or later you discover God's answered your prayer. How could he do that? And then, of course, you have to act. You have to be brave, and you have to be yourself. The early church grew and changed the world as ordinary people talked about their faith to their friends. And I think we are beginning to be in a situation where people are a bit more open to Christianity, maybe, than they have been in the past. And God is at work out there in the lives of people who we don't even realize, like that chap who walked past when Greg was giving out things. We don't even realize those people are thinking about things unless we begin to get to know them. How can they believe, writes Paul, unless they hear? And how can they hear unless someone speaks to them? And for many people, that someone is you. So now Marion is going to lead our prayers. Thanks, Marion.